This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. We are the ones we've been waiting for. Federal workers don't have to be the sacrificial lambs for Trump's political hijinks to fund his wall. And I'm delighted to have on one of our most respected labor leaders in the country, Hector Figueroa, president of Local 32BJ, SEIU, Service Employees International Union. And Hector, I want to start with, because I think this has everything to do with how we got in this position of allowing government to be closed in any event. I was watching, to my horror and dismay, Meet the Press, where Tom Brokaw was a guest. Two of the things that Mr. Brokaw said, which to me informed this whole discussion that we are about to have, he insisted, and has for quite some time, that the problem with Hispanics are they should work harder at assimilation. That's one of the things I've been saying for a long time. They ought not to be just codified in their communities, but make sure that all their kids are learning to speak English and that they feel comfortable in the communities. But that wasn't enough. A then went on to say, and I just wanted to suggest and talk about that on the Republican side, a lot of people see the rise of an extraordinary important new constituent in American politics, Hispanics, who will, of course, become Democrats. Also, I hear, when I push a little harder, well, I don't know whether I want brown grandbabies, Broco added, without elaborating. I mean, that's also a part of it. That, to me, sets the stage. It didn't just begin with him, but somebody with his prominence on Meet the Press. Your thoughts on how this strain of racism in all sectors of the professional community, the political community, and amongst the grassroots informs what happened to our workers with the shutdown of the government over Trump's hijinks to build a wall.
Thank you first for having me on the show, and I couldn't agree more. This is not simply about bickering or a political fight like we used to between Democrats and Republicans, leading to a shutdown over differences on budget priorities. This was a shutdown that was very deliberate, being pursued by the Trump administration over racial politics, xenophobia and racism displayed by his president and members of his party, with sometimes a consent and collaboration with some folks on the Democratic Party, has been happening for a very long time. The good news in this shutdown is that, contrary to other events, there was a display of incredible unity among Democrats and among unions and among people who could have easily, in the halls of power, taken on the comments by Broco and others and said, let's build a wall, let's not stop people from working and the federal government for providing services, let's give the president what he wants and move on. And while you have the people who continue to echo the messaging from this president that we need to be afraid of people who don't look like them, that they need to be supported in the efforts to contain immigrants coming to this country because of who they are. They are mostly people of color coming from different parts of the world who, in their view, change the America that they would like to be, which is a more pale and stale country. The truth is the level of support that they found in this shutdown was not really that much. It was from the fringes of the political spectrum and from people who want to play into those racial politics. I like to put as a contrast the many workers who spoke about the hardship they were going through, many Democrats in Congress who basically said no, not $1, not to the wall, and rejected this kind of politics. So, yes, this has been building up for many years. I'm hopeful, cautiously optimistic, that there is a turning point where the tolerance for this kind of trade-off at the expense of the most vulnerable workers in our society is going to start to be increasingly challenged and people not falling for it.
Hector, we're going to play a piece from the Women's March in which one of your members, who is a contract worker, Michelle O'Gara, speaks about her situation being locked out.
105 across the country that is currently impacted by the government shutdown. My co-workers and I work for a government contract, and we effectively pay wages when this government shutdown ends. We don't know when this craziness will end and when we will be able to pay off the bills and expenses that are piling up during the present shutdown. We are here today to reject hate and embrace love for women, for workers, for immigrants, and for our neighbors, and for our fellow human beings. We want to fight to make America a better nation for all of us. To do that, we need to build bridges to connect us, not a wall that divides us. Mr. Trump, Ms. McConnell, Republicans, end the shutdown now and reopen our government. This government shutdown is a double attack. It's an attack on the hardworking men and women like me and my co-workers who keep our government running every day. It is also an attack on immigrants like me, my family, friends, and neighbors, because you shut down the government to force Congress to give you money to build a wall to keep people like me out of the U.S. So I took it personally when the president shut down the government because he can't get money for a wall to keep my family, my friends, and my neighbors out of the country we call home. It's a symbol that we don't trust and don't want people from Mexico, Central America. No, we don't want their wall of hate, their wall of fear. This is hurting all Americans. These are agencies where services to the public are being affected, including public housing, farmers, nutritional programs for children and the elderly, hospitals and health programs. And the shutdown. Reopen the government. 32
Well, I think the government's reopened, although we've got this sword of Damocles hanging over our shoulder. And we wanted to play that to remind about the pain that was upon the almost 400,000 workers and forcing another 400,000 deemed essential to show up to work without pay, a large number of employees working for employees with federal contracts who were laid off and no hope of potentially recouping their losses. Just take us back to that moment before we progress and say, what the heck do we have to do to make sure that our working class, our workers are not used as pawns in this game of escalating right reaction and xenophobia in this country?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really happy that you play Michelle. These days in social media, there have been so many conversations as to which protagonist from the working class should get the award for, you know, having the right message at this moment to motivate people and end the shutdown. And I would put Michelle's out there with many others. Face me as a member of 32BJ who said point blank on CNN, at the risk of losing her job working for a contractor, Mr. Trump, give up on the wall. These are workers that are risking a lot. You know, these are not people who can take the level of risk that this involves. You know, their employer could come later and retaliate against them. We're going to make sure that they have the backing of the union if they consider to do so. But these are ordinary workers, not only saying that the hardship of the shutdown is affecting them and they are in need of getting the money for the work that they are still doing but not being paid for, but they're also articulating a vision for this country of unity, of multiracial solidarity, and rejecting the politics of the administration of separating and dividing working people based on who we are, where we come from, and how we look like. I like to go back to that moment because I feel that, again, in the narrative of how we are resisting and fighting in a combination of decades of attacks against working people, racism, discrimination, xenophobia, hate of women and people of color. Here you have a woman of color who is very much articulating how many of our members feel, but also a growing segment of the urban multiracial working class, that part of the agent here of change that ended the shutdown. But I'd like to say that we're still fighting for workers like her to be paid. The story that we tried to drive very intensely through this shutdown, I think we got the attention of most of the media and people in Congress, and we're going to keep telling it, is that there are two workforces here that were directly impacted. You have the workers directly for the federal government, like the traffic controllers, TSA, and others. And then you have the workers that work for contractors of the federal government, which are actually more lower pay, more diversely represented in terms of the demographics, mostly women and men of color, and then also low pay, lower wages, for whom the loss of income is certain unless we do something about it. The government is not going to pay for the 35 days of this shutdown, people like Michelle, back wages. So it's now upon us as the union, our allies, members in Congress, Ayanna Pressley introduced a bill in the House. Senator Tony Smith also, I believe, introduced a bill. And we have the support of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck, making sure that these workers will be made whole. But to me, the amazing thing is that even at the risk of the politics not turning in their favor or their employer doing something, they stood up during this shutdown and they're true heroes. Every time that they spoke against the root cause of the shutdown, and not only their personal story of hardship, but the defiance against the politics of hate. And they are people of color, so they were victimized twice, not being paid and also suffering from the consequences of this administration driving this kind of divisive politics.
Hector, if Trump has the chutzpah and the stupidity to do this again, do we need mass demonstrations across the country, both organized by labor and by progressive groups? Do we really need to come out into the streets?
Absolutely. It took a little bit of time for there to be a response on the streets against the shutdown. And, you know, we can argue and try to figure out why. We have our own view in 32BJ because we were talking to federal unions and impacted unions. And in the past, unions waited to see how it happened. Normally, it would not be for a long duration. Contracted workers, we would not be heard of. So that's why we came so aggressively from day one on the airwaves, telling their stories and making sure they were not invisible anymore. And then as time passed and everybody started to suffer the consequences of no pay, in the longest shutdown in our history, then workers began to take more risk, either individually calling sick or, you know, not performing their work, quite frankly, in the way that they're used to, or, you know, talking about and taking action on the streets. We saw demonstrations and rallies in D.C., the takeover of Connell's office by folks, including members of 32BJ, led by workers like Michelle and Faye Smith and others. And then we saw the takeover of the Senate building, the Hart building, for a while. And where we were heading with the actions on the street and in Congress and the workers not showing up to work for free was an escalation. And I think that working people really turned out to be the decisive point of pressure on two ends. One, showing the president with what happened in LaGuardia, Atlanta, DCA, and Newark, where there were not enough traffic controllers, but also with the demonstration to the Democrats that even workers who were at risk were not going to give in to the wall and were not going to give in to the policies of hate, which helped, in my view, keep Democrats more united and not seeking some kind of a compromise to pacify the president. It's important to recognize those two elements here. As we head for the ending of this short extension, there's possibility another shutdown. Trump is talking about it. February 15 is the deadline. We have to mobilize like never in our history in the labor movement, take the greatest level of risk, engage in civil disobedience, do rallies and action, engage in not showing up to work. And then the federal unions need to be very deliberate, but they also have to be careful because, remember, the federal government can easily decertify and end the existence of unions like they did to the traffic controllers. So what that means is that the rest of labor, public sector workers, private sector workers, like the president of the flight attendants made this call on Thursday, we need to do a level of activity and take a level of risk that is much more difficult for people who are in the federal government that Trump wants to privatize and wants to eliminate labor representation. So we need to be strategic. We need to be smart about how we do it. But, yes, we need a big response. And I think that's where we were headed when the shutdown ended.
And we are speaking with Hector Figueroa, president of Local 32BJ, SEIU, Service Employees International Union. And you mentioned the air traffic controllers, and I immediately went back in my mind to PATCO. And I've never let go of my pain that organized labor and community allies did not come out in full force to support their brothers and sisters in PATCO, and Reagan busted that union, the consequences of which are still being felt today in the organized labor movement. And as I say that, I keep thinking about President Trump not only threatened a wage freeze for federal employees, he also proposed cutting their retirement benefits by $143.5 billion. And Congress counter-proposed a 1.9% wage increase. But with the government shutdown, it, of course, is unclear whether federal workers will receive a raise or maintain their pension benefits this year. So the stakes are high, high, and the attacks have been ferocious. And I'm thinking in my mind about France's yellow vests. I'm thinking about a million worker march. I wanted at the Women's March people to say, you're coming back here in another couple of weeks. Get your bus tickets ready. Get your sneakers on, because whether or not the federal workers contractually can do certain things, they certainly have families, community allies, and the private sector unions must see this as a collective battle. What's actually in the work to get that million worker march and say, hell no, not on our watch?
We need to start by making sure that when the president says all workers are going to be getting their back pay and fast, that is actually what happens. So I think that's step number one. Step number two is all the unions are already doing this at the federal level, at the highest level, not only FL-CIO unions, but unions outside of the FL, like SEIU and others, planning what the response is going to be over the next few days. There will be conversations. There will be negotiations. That's the nature of our republic. And we have to make sure that the outcome of that is not something that is a slap in the face of not only the furlough workers, but immigrant workers around the country. So the next step is also to be communicating to Democrats that we cannot have the kind of outcome of this that gives the president what he wanted after workers have suffered so much and resisted what the president was proposing, willing to sacrifice their families. It would be a travesty if we give the president now, within these 3 weeks, what he was seeking to do by holding hostage, you know, American workers and immigrant workers in this country working for American employers. Those are two key pieces. Whether or not the shutdown will lead to the massive mobilization that you're describing, I really don't know. But I do know that in the course of the next 2 years, you're likely going to see an intensification, an escalation that we haven't seen in decades. Look at what precedes Trump and what happens during Trump. Our own union last year organized some 6,000 workers, and we won $19 an hour for airport workers. In the digital media, workers have been organizing a number of venues everywhere. We have seen the success of workers organizing in many points in the country, the defiance of the teachers' union. There has been wave after wave of strikes, with LA being the most recent one, but it also was Chicago, and it was Oklahoma, and it was West Virginia. And then we see the incredible, incredible movement around app workers. The victory of taxi workers in New York City against Uber is extraordinary. It's a David and Goliath story. So I think that we're beginning to see a resurgence of labor militancy, a refocusing on organizing, workers demanding the union, low unemployment, and a direct attack on working people like Janus and these shutdowns are going to be a very, very dramatic combination to elevate the opportunities for organized labor to rebuild its power and win for people who are in the movement and people who are not in the labor movement. The 5 for 15 years is another example. So to me, it's important to envision that million workers' march. Maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't, because, you know, the outcomes are already favorable to us over the next 3 weeks. We don't know. We'll take it day by day. But what I would say is there is already a direction for labor that labor needs to capitalize. We need to invest in motivating working people to take a stand. And whether it's a march or a million different worksite efforts to win dignity and respect for ordinary workers that don't make it into the media, but win the union, win better wages and respect, both are equally important. And they will inform, hopefully, what the candidates for president in 20 intend to do. We need unions for all, and we need to make sure that the root problems of that allowed Trump to exist, the abandonment of the working class by many corporate Democrats, and the racism intrinsic to this country, that we meet both of them, you know, forcefully. And I think that the shutdown allows us to tell a story of potential worker power. Whether it's realized on the streets or not over the next 3 weeks, we won, largely because of the unity of purpose among workers. And we need to continue that story and build from it.
Hector, this is a little bit more difficult question. I'm not going to push you to where necessarily Sarah Nelson, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, went, which is, we need this shutdown to end with a general strike. However, within the organized labor movement, within the federal unions, there are some very conservative leadership who indeed support Trump, support the wall, etc. So how much of an impediment is that going to be, and how much of a struggle is there either between the rank and file and the leadership or other members of organized labor who respond to positions held that are fundamentally xenophobic and conservative and propel Trump forward? I mean, is that something you take on, too?
Absolutely. The labor movement is not perfect, and it reflects both the present and the past, but it also, you know, points to the future in ways that are not different from other institutions or organizations in society. And I think that, you know, starting with the call for a general strike, it was interesting because I only learned about the call for the general strike, really, quite frankly, through social media. And we were having our meeting of the ACLU executive board, planning and talking about the escalation for the following week, when that call was made as, if I understand correctly, the head of the flight attendants was receiving an award. And she made that call, and a very powerful and moving speech that I only came to read, quite frankly, over this weekend, because we were very busy trying to figure out how to, you know, fight for 2,000 of members who were desperately seeking food stamps and trying to be able to meet their needs. But that being said, I would say it is very symbolic. The other part that she said was, or something big enough, and she acknowledged that the federal unions were in a more limited way constrained with the question of a strike. So if you read her whole words, it was general strike, as a proposition, but underneath it, doing something big, making sure that private sector and public sector unions that are not representing federally employed workers could respond to the fight, and the recognition that there was fear that if federal unions went on strike, that would facilitate a response by the Trump administration of anti-union measures and easily seize the moment to decertify the unions or do much worse. So there is that complexity, and I feel that the movement ahead needs to be recognition that strikes work. We have used strikes to win in union organizing and to win good contracts. Generalized strikes are very, very unique events. Rosa Luxemburg used to be a good teacher about how the mass strike was a unique event that accelerated both class consciousness, political organization, but they are not easily fabricated. They are things that happen under very special circumstances. I think that what we need to do is commit to militancy, commit to organization, have a strategy, and then demand from us more than we normally do during these times, and be willing to take more risks than we would normally accept under the present circumstances. I think that unions are responding in different ways to the Trump administration. There were unions that were trying to get a good deal on infrastructure. looking the other way or swallowing, you know, the racist politics that led to his being in office. That strategy, in my opinion, has failed. There were unions who were out on the streets from day one. We were there, and municipal unions from New York City were there. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how these different tendencies in labor go forward and which tendencies dominate. But I would say whatever it is, I see tremendous opportunity on the 9 out of 10 workers in our economy that have no experience with the union, have no idea what a union is, and are also brewing with discontent, brewing with dissatisfaction in the working conditions, and are horrorized at the growing income inequality and the lack of a voice in the workplace and on the issues that matter most to them. So I think that the more we try to organize those workers, the more the labor movement will change in the direction that we hope will be representative and dominant. The more we focus on the 1 out of 10 and how we resolve our issues and how we defend our members, the weaker we will be. So I think that in this environment, not only do we need to engage in politics and fight contracts and try to sway labor in a more leftward direction, we have to talk to the 9 out of 10 workers and organize them, because they may be the key on how we revitalize the labor movement with a whole new sense of struggle, hope, and militancy.
And Hector Figueroa, president of Local 32BJ, SEIU, just wave at us, and our communities will be there to support our sisters and brothers in the workforce, because we are the ones that we have been waiting for to support our sister and brother federal workers and the working class against a backward reactionary administration. No, dude.
So thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to break over, but I just wanted to say the week of Valentine's Day is February 14th. February 15th, the extension on the budget, you know, comes to an end. A shutdown may happen. Everybody should clear the calendars and have as a day of love the possibility that we'll be taken out on the street on that holiday like never before.
And
if these things don't get resolved.
Fabulous. And we can wear the color red, which for many reasons is my favorite color. So thank you again, Hector Figueroa, President Local 32BJ, SEIU. And, of course, maybe what we do then is also meld that issue, because they really are intimate with the concept of regime change at home and not in Venezuela. No to U.S. orchestrated coup in Venezuela. No to Trump imbuing himself with the power to decide the leader of a sovereign country. Hey, where the heck are the Democrats? This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.